The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd still go, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
So Bernard Brogan is officially back, lads. He scored 1-6. Now, there were six frees, but an absolutely sensational goal when Plunkett's through with St Jude's. It was 1-9 to 2-6. So Plunkett's used a double sweeper by all accounts. So the Dublin Championship is in full swing. I'm very happy about that. Conan, you're even more happy about that. You're out in the Championship tomorrow night.
You have me on to get an interview before the Dublin Championship. The big one on Friday night. Yeah.
Well, we'll see how the result goes. You could be in the mix on Monday. You never know.
Yeah. The Dublin Championship's hard to beat. Dubs TV really does it a great service, doesn't it?
It does.
Adds everything to it. All these clips going around and watching the Bernard Brogan goal this morning. Like, you know, it's just, here it is. Here's the big championship.
An absolutely super goal. Diagonal ball. Brogan surrounded by three defenders. Well, obviously, I said Plunkett's used a double sweeper, so immediately Bernard Brogan's been hit with a double sweeper in return. At a good diagonal ball, beat the three sweepers, and Bernard Brogan stuck it in the net with his left foot. Connor, a fellow on Twitter, tried to wind me up by saying he celebrated for Plunkett's but never celebrates for Dublin. It's all Jim Gavin's fault. It was a bare celebration now, I have to say.
So. There wasn't much to it, no, in fairness.
See, lads try to get a wind up out of me.
Why wouldn't you celebrate after a goal like that? Just the way to beat the double sweeper, lofted ball in over the top, Bernard Brogan wins it, finishes expertly with the left foot. If you can't celebrate that,
yeah,
exactly. He's been consistent with his celebration as well. He's always on the sort of double fist bump, and I have
first hand experience. 2007 Leinster final, he scored a goal before half time and he did a dance in front of the hill like this.
That's him.
He's a showman. He's toned it way down.
Right.
So he's been consistent since you've noticed it. That's about it. I was on the receiving end of that dance right in front of the hill. Anyways, Paddy Christie is coming up to talk to us about Ballymunkickhams, their favourites again this year. They're 1 or 2 to 1. They've been favourites pretty much since they won it in 2012, and they're the great enigma of Dublin football. They haven't retained it. They've lost two finals since 2012, so we're going to find out. He's been with nearly all of their players since under 10 level, or had them at some stage underage, so we'll talk to him and see what the hell is going on in Ballymunkickhams and why aren't they winning it every year and the All-Ireland with the team they have on paper. So moving on from that, lads, I have a few disciplinary bits of news. The first one up is Carlo. Now, Turlough O'Brien has been hit with 20-week ban, Stephen Poacher with 12 weeks, Brendan Murphy with 12 weeks. So anyone will have seen the video of this incident by now, and you'll be in no doubt that these bans are absolutely warranted. So they were hit with the suspensions from the CCCC after the Down match. They were charged with threatening conduct towards a referee and minor physical interference with a referee. So they appealed that. And on appeal, the minor physical interference with a referee was dropped because there wasn't enough evidence, and probably the camera is a little bit too far away to see what physical interference, but absolutely threatening conduct towards a referee was 100% provable, judging by the video. Like, I mean, Turlough O'Brien ran across the field like a football hooligan, you know, like, I mean, he was running so fast he almost tore his hamstring. I thought he was going to hit the ground halfway across. What was he going to do running that fast over? And what actually happened, Brendan Murphy's around the ref, Poacher's around the ref, that's no surprise, and you have Turlough O'Brien sprinting from a sideline. Now, anyone who hasn't seen the video, it's on the direct other side of the field. He has to sprint the whole way across. Then members of the public came in from the terrace and came after the referee, while the Dublin Carlow management and the Brendan Murphy were surrounding him. Disgraceful scenes. Like, I mean, so the CCCC hit Turlough O'Brien with 16-week ban, and because they appealed it, and I'd say they appealed it to pass by the Laois game so they could all be involved in that and try and avoid relegation. Don't have too many issues with that, to be honest with you. Most would do that. And Turlough got his ban increased from 16 to 20 weeks, which is proper order as well.
Yeah, it wasn't nice at all. The video was very... It was almost like it's really bad for a club level. And this is happening at National League, inter-county level, like, you know, and all that, you know, getting around the referee and... You're right, like, he sprinted the whole way to the referee, and I don't know what were you planning on doing. Actually, it was interesting, as he was running there's a Down player there trying to stop him for about 20 metres as Turlough's running towards him, and he's trying to calm him down. He's putting his hands out saying, don't bother about it. But Turlough just runs on past him and runs towards the referee. And I know it's frustrating.
It was the speed at which he was running. Yeah. It would remind you of somebody, a fan running onto the field.
And almost fell, yeah, as you say, because he was just out of control almost. Yeah. Like, and I know we all get frustrated, and I do believe that they were a bit hard done by in that game, but... like, what were you going to do there then? Like, nothing was going to change. Like, you know?
That doesn't matter. Like, a few people had to be forcibly restrained. This wasn't the restraint where, oh, come at me, you know, and they really want you to actually hold them back. They really wanted to get at the ref. It was really messy. And, like, I think they were cleared of minor physical interference, but it's a good job because there was somebody took the initiative straight away to go to the ref and make sure that nobody was getting at him.
Yeah.
And to be honest, if that had escalated any further, there is every chance that somebody could have got at the ref. And maybe not Turlough O'Brien, but somebody from the crowd that was so raged, so enraged.
One person in particular.
Who knows what they might have. Yeah, they were like, there was somebody nearly on the ground holding the back. Yeah. Who knows what they would have done.
So the whole problem with this game was that they thought the referee played too much at a time. I wasn't at the game. This is just from reports that Carlo equalised the game with extra time up, and the referee allowed another down attack, and from that attack Down won a 50 metre free, and Carlo thought, well, he's going to try and kick it from here, and they all switched off. The Down took it really quick, and Donal Lahir scored a point from play to win it. Referee blows it up. So they were incensed at that. Now, we don't know, was there injuries in the additional time? We don't know the issues surrounding that. But even if you feel hard done by, like, there's no circumstances do that as a management team and have a referee in fear of his own safety on a football field. Absolutely not acceptable. And looks like they're all going to miss the championship, because I think the 12-week ban brings them up past the Leinster final and past round 3 of the qualifiers. And with all due respect to Carlo, you can't see them going too much further than that anyway. So, like, I mean, you can't have too much sympathy when you see the video. But they refused to talk to the media afterwards, and they tried to play the victims by saying this is how smaller counties are treated, you know, and all this kind of thing. And my opinion on Carlo is that, like Leitrim this year, everybody thought it was a great feel-good story. It was fantastic to see a small county like Carlo get out of Division 4, and there was universal agreement that this was fantastic, just like there is for Leitrim. And then it was the game in Dr. Cullen Park against Laois, you start hearing stories from the Laois players about what Poacher is at on the sideline and running in, and what he says to players, and what some of the Carlo players are saying to some of the Laois players. And one in particular was at it again on the last league game in Inamore Park, talking to him about his sister and all this kind of nonsense. And you hear all this, and my kind of, you know, enjoyment of seeing Carlo do well started kind of to decrease a little bit. And we know Turlough is a gent, but he wasn't a gent in that clip in any manner of means. But, like, I mean, I don't know. I just, like, when you see Leitrim, like, there's no stories coming out of Leitrim. They're back in Division 4 now with all this carry-on. And if they wonder why they don't get any breaks from referees, well, maybe if you leave them alone. Like, Davy Fitz doesn't know why he doesn't get a break off referees, because he's constantly at them, and they're humans. And the referees see Poacher running onto the field and his antics. They hear Carlo players, whatever they're saying. Don't be surprised. Like, I mean, that's all I'd say.
Sure, officials talk as well. Like, if they're involved in games where Carlo have been kind of acting up, they're going to be telling their fellow referees what they've been doing. And while that shouldn't necessarily dictate the opinion of an individual referee, it's human nature. You can't help but be influenced by what's happened before. But if they're looking for sympathy, they're going the wrong way about it, because, you know, I think they took a media ban after the game and said, oh, well, write what you see yourselves. We don't need to comment on it. But the reality is that like, people are only seeing what's happened there, what's happened after the Down game, and they're definitely going to make their opinions on that. And as you said, sympathy for Carlo will lessen as a result.
Yeah, and for me, they got their comeuppance here now, because they're all suspended, and you'd like to think that they might learn a lesson from the whole thing. So if you have anything else to add, we'll move on from that.
Well, they've done really well in the last 2 years.
Yeah, so Fintan Kelly, at that same Central Hearings Committee, he escaped a ban for his sending off in the league game. Remember that, Conan? I think it was Keane. Were you here, Conor? No, you probably remember.
I heard
it.
You talking about it. I saw the tackle though.
It was, they found the alleged offence of striking with the elbow not proven. And that's exactly what we said on the show. It's impossible to say. I thought it was a fair shoulder. I didn't even think it was a foul. You and Keane, we actually were saying James Horne was on that side and he didn't think there was much in it. So we were thinking that was a better view of even the camera view. So that seems to be definitely the right decision anyways. Fintan Kelly's off.
Yeah, it looked, if anything, his hand might have been up, you know, as he was going into tackle. It didn't look like an elbow. And as you say, he just couldn't prove it anyway. There was no
Fergal Boland had to jump towards the ball. So I think he might have even jumped towards the contact with Fintan Kelly's arm or something like that. It definitely wasn't a swinging motion or like Fintan Kelly hitting Fergal Boland in the face. It looked bad because the ball was really 50-50. It just hopped awkwardly in front of Fergal Boland. And I just think it was as much the way he jumped into it as the way Fintan Kelly, because I saw it as well, it was given as a free. I thought when he was going for his card, that's not even a card, never mind. It was barely a free, it was just a collision, and a red card just seemed harsh. So it's glad it's good that it's off. Made.
So Seamus Harnady, some more GAA politics for you here, lads, if you can stomach it. So he's gone to the Central Appeals Committee to clear him to play against Tipperary. So he was sent off against Tipperary. This is Tipperary in the Munster League on May the 12th. He was sent off against Tipperary in the league game. Now, it was an absolute clear sending off, a strike with the hurl. He got a rush of blood to the head. He's accepting that the red card was absolutely fine. He's not disputing the red card. What he's doing, he's disputing this on a point of law. So this gets, we talked about this in the hurling show. So there's a rule, right? So Cork played Kilkenny then in a relegation playoff. So he was hit with a one-match ban. Cork want that relegation playoff to be counted as the one game ban and have him back for the next game. So he's holding his hands up. I was sent off, no problem with that, straight red, one game ban. The dispute here and the legal issue is coming in relation to whether that game was a game that saw out his one game ban or not, right? So the GAA rule, which I read up, so the official guide states that next game in competition in relation to suspension stipulates that a game or competition, the sole purpose of which is to determine qualification or relegation in respect of the following year's championship or league, shall not be deemed to be same competition. So the GAA rule clearly states that a relegation playoff is not another game, so you can't see out your suspension. So wait, there's more, right? There was no relegation riding on this game, right? Because the leagues were restructured. So this was not actually a relegation playoff. That's what Cork are arguing on a legal term. Isn't that amazingly awful, really, when you think about it? Like, it couldn't happen anywhere else other than the GAA. So it'd be interesting, because Conor Delaney from Kilkenny was sent off against Wexford that same last round game. And he would have played that relegation inverted commas game, and so he's actually injured now, so he's in a race against time to get back for the Dublin game next month. But it'll be interesting to see legally whether the GAA can enforce that extra game relegation playoff when Cork will argue it wasn't relegation.
the writing of the rule is just trying to say a bonus game, like, you know, like a playoff game or whatever, like, it's not one of the regular season games, but they've just stipulated it has to be relegation or promotion.
So Cork could win this, I think.
Their wording is going to screw them over, I think. Like, they are intending to say just an extra game.
Yeah.
But they haven't said that.
Yeah, okay. So some goalkeeping stats here that were in the Independent was that it's the pass backs keeper. So there's been a lot of talk about Graham Brodie. We talked about it a lot at the weekend and how he's just been caught out twice in 2 years. And all the fad now is that goalkeepers come out, create the extra man. So Klain were the first ones, I think it was 2012, to go to Congress, or 2015 went to Congress, and their motion was calling for a goalkeeper in receipt of a pass back from a colleague had to play the ball away by kicking it instead of hand passing it. And maybe it was to reduce hand passes, maybe it was to increase the degree of difficulty of having the pass back, because Stephen O'Mara, who's done work for us from Grassroots GAA, he proposed that pass backs to the goalkeeper be banned altogether. Now you can see where they're coming from on this, and I think it probably would be no harm, it wouldn't be a big deal. There is an extra excited element of a goalkeeper being able to come out, but if they receive a kick out directly from a kick out, they can't pass that back to him. So in other words, it will encourage teams to press up without that fear of just going straight back to the goalie. Then you're down a man, and is the press been really any good? You know what I mean? The press isn't as effective if you can go straight back to the goalie. I'm all for that. But the analysis of double the number, or they analysed 10 games back in 2015, and there was an average of 3 passes back per game back then. So fast forward 4 years, and there's 10 per game, so it's treble.
Yeah.
So it's going back to the goalkeeper all the time. So I'm nearly almost like the back pass rule in soccer. years ago. There are sidelines being taken back. You know, there are games in play where it just goes across and then play keeps coming up the other side with the goalkeeper. Yeah. And oftentimes, if you're all paired off, he might be just looking around, who am I going to get?
Yeah.
I'd be nearly in favour of that back pass thing now.
It can be a really handy out for a cornerback if he's a free kick, just to be able to go back to the keeper and then get the hand pass back off him and stop the attack.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that's more than treble, because we've talked in the past about GA being copycat. So basically, if somebody saw Niall Morgan doing a short kick out and getting a hand pass back, and then some other manager sees it, you know, oh, that's a good tactic. You know, so just kind of replicating them themselves. And I think that's only, it's obviously only increased in recent years. I don't think it'd have a huge impact on the game. But if it encourages more pressing up, I think so. But I'm just trying to think of teams that maybe, some of the top teams that do rely on that short kickouts and maybe getting that handy out back to the keeper afterwards. And off the top of my head, there's not many coming to it. So,
no.
But if it encourages high pressing, then I'm all for it.
Yeah,
as well,
and I think the thing is, most scores from play, you can't do an aggressive press anyway. So that short kickout is on. And you don't necessarily have to give it straight back. It's just when the aggressive press is on, it's almost like all those will go to midfield then, and you see more contests. Yeah. Maybe that would be the case, because a goalkeeper definitely wouldn't give it to somebody being marked tightly if they had to actually take on the man that was. Yeah. You know, it would probably cut out short kickouts in the instances that a point results from a set play. Yeah,
especially if they're running back towards their own goal, they don't want to give it that, and then have to, your man has to either turn around and take your man on, rather than just to hand it out, giving it back to the keeper.
Yeah, I think it might add to the excitement of it. Conan, you don't like rule changes, so I see you going very
already.
Quiet. his head went
quiet.
Down. I went, I'll just move on here, or will I just?
I don't like it. I like the evolution of goalkeepers. I think it's been one of the best things in recent years.
I have to agree that that's the part I'm on the fence about. But goalkeepers don't have to. It's not precluded. Goalkeepers from coming out. Brody comes out at all stages in a game. It's not stopping that. It's not stopping Began coming out and receiving a pass in play. It's just from a kick out, which I agree with you. I wouldn't necessarily like to see goalkeepers having to go back to just stay on their lines. Yeah, I think that evolution is good.
Let's try it in the McKenna Cup.
There we go. Let's try it with a view of coming in the championship 3 years down the line. So Michael Murphy was doing media this week, and he was talking about Andy McEntee, who accused him of trying to influence the referee. So after the league final, so he said, what do you say to it? He said, it wouldn't be a bad thing to have, even though it's rubbish. There's sometimes in some instances where you commit a foul and you get a yellow card, but I'm in no place to influence anything. I go out and try to play the game as best I can as an individual. It's the first time I've ever been asked about it in an interview or anything like that. It's a difficult one to answer. It's the first time it's come up. Now, my opinion on this is Michael Murphy absolutely influences referees. There's no doubt that the big players on your teams influence referees, whether they mean to or whether that's their intentions. But Joe Soap cornerback complaining to a referee versus the star midfielder, you absolutely, they do put them under pressure. Now, there's no harm in complaining to a referee. You'd have an issue maybe with the same Michael Murphy following the referee around on all sort of decisions. But if decisions he's directly involved in, I don't think that's influenced the referee. That's having an old moan at the referee necessarily. But it does influence them at the same time. So I can see where Andy McEntee's coming from and Michael Murphy.
He's the person I've heard most from the crowd, people shouting, let him referee the game, because he always seems to be beside the referee.
Yeah,
having
but as captain, is it your duty to do that as well? I don't know.
He's just very cute.
Yeah. It was actually Joe Canning years ago made huge headlines after an All-Ireland hurling final. It was the drawn game in 2012, where he said about Henry Shefflin, he said, in one instance in the first half, Henry ran 30 or 40 yards down the field and was given out to Barry Kelly and Damien Hayes for a free. That's not sportsmanlike either at the same stage. That's the way it goes. That's probably the experience they have. Big players are doing this for donkey's ears, lads. Yeah. You know that. And especially if it's a Michael Murphy or a Henry Shefflin, who have incredible reputations within the game, who are seen as honourable, clean, you know what I mean? Everything that's good about the GA. Don't think for a second there, lad, you got that wrong now, referee. You know that's going, Henry Shefflin now. They're probably the two examples of fellas with the respect they have in the game, telling a referee, you got that one wrong. Yeah, it's an app.
I'll definitely get into it.
Feel bad
heads.
If you're
yeah.
a
you yeah, absolutely yeah, yeah. would. You were saying to a referee, they're like, they don't have bad reputations. They're legends of the game. I wonder, did I get that one wrong? You
yeah,
know,
yeah, 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 no,
there's a massive influence on referees.
I remember Joe Canning saying that at the time. It was after the drawn game. I think there was 3 weeks to go until the replay at the time because the football final had to be played afterwards. And I thought it was a bit. I thought it was very brave of him to come out with something like that because. The hurling press needed like stuff to fill the papers between the two finals, and when he called out Henry Shefflin for that, they were talking about it for weeks. So, you know, I like that was 2012, I think. I don't think Joe Canning would be doing it.
No,
now.
And it was 3 weeks between that replay.
They went
to town on Joe in that. Like, I mean, that's 7 years ago. So he was.
He was young. Yeah. He'd been around for about 3 or 4 years, but he wasn't maybe as mature and experienced as he was now. But but you're dead right. Like that, and like it's up to the individual referees not to be influenced by it. But like 100%, if somebody of the stature of Michael Murphy or Henry Shefflin questions a decision, or even tries to, you hear them try to butter up referees as well.
Tell them to do something. Have you ever met a manager who hasn't told two or three lads? Let's go over, shake his hand, be nice to him. You get on his good side. I've actually seen it work. And this is why we're talking about the Carlo thing. Referees are human. If you're tormenting a referee, like, you're not going to get 50-50s. It's very simple. You're not. You're insulting him. You're telling him he's doing a terrible job. You charm him and say you're having a good game. That's cheesy. Like, he'll see straight through that. But, you know, good call, ref. You got that one right. Just to reaffirm in his head he's having a good game. You know, or, you know,
that's probably said in every team before every game.
Like,
let's get the ref on side. Yeah. Like, that's a tactic. Get the ref on side. No back chat to him because we want him to be nice to us. I watch Michael Murphy, actually. It's a bit of a diversion, but have a free kick on the 45 in that final against Meath and take it from inside the D. You and Keemerson or Killian O'Connor was the best at that, but I couldn't believe it.
He went from the 45 inside
the 45, won the free, ended up taking the free inside the D.
Right.
So by the time he's rolled it forward a little bit and then picked it up and sat it back down, and then his routine runs him into the D.
Yeah.
And the ref wouldn't even notice. So there's all these little things that people are doing not that Michael Murphy needed the extra 10 yards, to be honest.
Yeah. No, you mentioned hurling news and hurling kind of controversies. So Declan Hannan was doing the same media day as Michael Murphy, and he's still being asked about what Jackie Terrell said about Limerick, that they're not a top three team. Can you believe that this is still going on? So I refuse to talk about this on the football on the hurling show because I said, what's the big deal here? That's Jackie's opinion, and probably being mischievous because they clearly are. And Limerick actually went out and destroyed Kilkenny the very next day after Jackie said it. It was on League Sunday. It was in the papers, and now we're into the league three games in, four games into the league. So now Declan Hannan is still answering questions about this. The Limerick captain, after winning the league, like, they're clear favourites for me to win the All-Ireland, clear favourites with all Galway's injuries, and he's still being asked, are you a top three team now or whatever. So I'm not having any issue with it's not meant to be a slight on whoever asked him, because like, we all ask questions or whatever, but he says he could be right. We mightn't be the top three team in Ireland. It's very, very competitive. He said, look, it just comes back to ourselves and our own performances on the pitch, and that's all we can really focus on. We can't focus on anything other teams are doing. We'll see where we are at the end of the year. So, like, what's he supposed to say about that? Like, this is what annoys me about punditry. And again, it's not at Jackie, who might have been stuck for something to write that Saturday. We all feel his pain there. Like, it's like Van Dijk has a great game. Is Van Dijk the best centre-back in the world?
Call it right now. Why does
everything have to be that? Why are we now creating top three hurling teams based on nothing? That's not analysis. It's so dull. I hate it. Like, off the ball, do power rankings. Like, that's a Hogan Stan message board kind of thing. Like, I mean, give me a break. It's just so dumb.
Well, where would you say Limerick are? Top five?
They're at least three. I wanted to get that off my chest. Is this best in the world? Give me a list of where they come in this, and I don't know. It's just taking over, lads, and it frustrates me.
Yeah. And they're like,
you'll never see a list on this show.
They make it more boring though. Like, there are so many nuances. You talk about Galway's injuries, and now like Kilkenny's injuries. Kilkenny are missing their whole spine. I'm thinking the Leinster Championship's wide open for Dublin to come into. But Jackie Tyrrell might not say that Dublin are the top three in Leinster.
Was that hurling analysis?
I think so. Thinks he's cheddar.
Nearly going to fall off my chair.
What happened, lads? I blacked out.
But this is the point I'm making about hurling as well. Nobody ever kind of. This is why it made so much headlines. Like, say, for example, if Tomás O'Shea said that Tyrone aren't a top three team, there would be no big deal about that. Like, hurling folk never criticise each other, never say anything kind of to rattle each other's feathers, and maybe that's why it made such big news.
Such a smaller club as well, I suppose, of the top teams maybe compared to.
But that's it. But like, I suppose if Joe Brawley said Dublin aren't top three now, he wouldn't say that because he adores them. I think people would just say you're talking nonsense. It wouldn't last maybe 6 weeks in the news cycle anyways. But anyways, we'll move on from that. Maybe it wasn't worth complaining about. I should hold off for more important things. Kieran McGeaney, right? So if we're continuing on, we bring soccer into this show an awful lot, so the old stock won't enjoy the soccer kind of analogies. But this is Kieran McGeaney getting the dreaded seal of approval. You know, like when a chairman tells you your job is secure, everything's going well, and then you get sacked 2 days later.
The vote of confidence.
So that's it. So so the Armagh County Board chairman, Mikey Savage, told the Irish News, he says, going forward, I'd like to think that Kieran will stay on. So he's in the fifth year of his 5-year deal. Did well to get a 5-year deal, any manager. He said, that would be my opinion. He has put a team in place there now, and I think he deserves the chance to get the best out of them. Geezer also has the full support of the players. The players are really behind him. There's no doubt about that. We're all hoping for another good run in the championship this summer. Well, not another good run in the Ulster Championship, because you haven't won one game in 4 years. So, like, I mean, it's hard to know when you try to analyse McGeaney's record with Armagh. He made an All-Ireland quarter-final with Grimley. But that was Grimley. That was in 2014, and they performed very well against Donegal and could almost beaten them that day. But that's not McGeaney. That was, you know, that was a joint managerial team. So on his own, he's made the quarterfinals once, and in the most impressive run through the qualifiers, beat Tipperary away, who were coming off an Ireland semi-final, maybe not the previous year, but 2 years previous, a big enough team, and then beat Kildare, who were a Super 8 team last year in Croke Park. But then got destroyed by Tyrone, which left left a bad kind of look on the year. Yeah. His league has been up and down. Like, I mean, he's been relegated from Division 2. He's been promoted. And this year, you'd say unimpressive enough in the league. Like, I mean, they should have been competing for promotion there. They've never won an Ulster Championship game. I love Geezer, you know that. But, like, I mean, he needs a good year this year to justify being kept on, no?
Yeah.
Even on this show, like, I've rarely heard a team generate as much excitement amongst ye as Armagh. Genuinely, like, in the last,
I have them back in here again today.
And in the last couple of years, it's kind of when you're talking about like teams that are going to make an impact on the year ahead, Armagh are often mentioned, and you see the players that they have at their disposal, and with somebody like Kieran McGeaney in charge, you think, yeah, there's definitely potential there. But then you look at their record. I mean, I don't know, like, not winning an Ulster for 4 years.
Not a game now.
And
they're not seen as a big player up there. When you think of Ulster, you think of Tyrone, Donegal, Armagh. Armagh have not broken into that in the last 4 years. Not only have they not broken into that, they haven't won a game.
Yeah, and they've lost some very disappointing games too. Like, teams they were expected to beat and got well beaten.
Fermanagh last year, the year before.
Cavan beat them a couple of years ago as well. So, like, I don't know. I'm waiting on Armagh to deliver. But, like, how long... Like, that's like Kieran McGeaney's had 4 years already. Like, I'm not surprised the players are kind of all for him. He's clearly a player's man. The Kildare players loved him as well. But, like, I don't know. To me, it's a very kind of average kind of term that McGeaney has had so far. I don't know what you think.
I would agree from the stats. Mark Shields has been defending him, not this year, but recently. He says, there's times we do feel like we've let him down a bit. Now, he was obviously asked this, because that's the answer would make you think these words were put in his mouth. But he still said it. He said, I do feel like there's times we've let him down a bit, especially in the Ulster Championship. We haven't really turned up the last 2 or 3 years. It's frustrating. We want as a team to do it for him, whether it's his last year or not. Now, I don't really necessarily like that. We want to do for him. We're letting him down. Why are you letting him down? Like, I mean, he prepares the team. Like, I mean, why are you not performing at your optimal level? You know, like, I mean, that's not... I never agree with that. And I've always been a player's man. And players respond to the good game plan, a good atmosphere in the squad, which there does seem to be a good atmosphere in the squad, but maybe the game plan isn't right. There's something not right, because they're massively underachieving, and I don't like ever a player saying we're letting him down. I'll bring in another soccer one. It's like a club in trouble with relegation. I would say we're letting down the manager at the moment. Like, I don't know, I think maybe that you would be appreciating the manager hearing you say that. Like, you know, I don't agree with that analysis.
Yeah. Like, there are cases, you know, where there's one game where players can mess things up and it's out of the manager's control. But you'd like to think over 5 years that evens out, and it is up to the manager preparing the team. And I remember that Tyrone game in Croke Park, and No, they're not at that level, but I was just scratching my head thinking, why are there three Armagh sweepers just sitting back there? There are no Tyrone forwards. Mark Bradley was there, and Armagh had somebody marking him and three sweepers marking him.
So they definitely got the tactics wrong that
exactly.
Day, yeah.
Like, you know, if he had those moments, now they probably wouldn't have beaten Tyrone anyway, but they did come into question. But what I would say is, like, we do get excited about them on paper, but they are like a, they're a charming team when you watch them play as well. And like, I was at that Tipperary game and the Kildare game and sort of fell in love with them, and they always have these moments. It's a really nice style of play in general.
It is. It's very easy on the eye, and that's why we like them so much. You know?
And they have those class moments, like that Jamie Clark goal against Tipperary, and like, you know, Mark Shields' performance against Tipperary on Robbie Cowley. Like, you know, they just have these great sort of things to stand out when you think about them. And you think of other teams the same way over the last few years, you wouldn't remember them as much.
Yeah, the Kildare game was the big one. But anyways, like, I mean, there's nothing to say that they won't have a good run this year, and it'd be perfectly justifiable. And anyways, I don't know what's going on, because when you ask people, I know that Kieran McGeaney is the senior manager, but he's also restructuring underage and he's doing a lot more work. So maybe it's the whole role of his rather than just a senior manager, you know? Like, I mean, that might be what the chairman is impressed with. And obviously McGeaney is a very impressive individual. Darren Hughes is out. We mentioned this on Monday that he went over his ankle. He's broken his ankle. So he's out for 10 to 12 weeks, which will see him out of the entire Ulster Championship. So he's not losing heart. He's keeping the head up, as you would say, and hopefully be back for the Super 8s. He's a huge loss. And the reason he's a huge loss, I didn't realise that last year's All-Star nominee, Niall Cairns, if you're wondering why you didn't see much of him, he's since undergoing surgery to repair a valve in his heart. So he did that last October. So he could make a return during summer, but Jesus, that sounds like a very serious injury. And then you have Kieran Hughes, who missed a whole league with a hamstring injury. Now, Kieran Hughes, I think, has fallen out of favour. He was a sub for a lot of the championship last year, just getting on. There are three huge players around the middle for Monaghan. Like, I mean, there's no way they can do without them. And that throws Monaghan's Ulster Championship hopes, for me, out the window.
Who plays midfield then, I wonder, with all them gone? Because they against Mayo, they played Neil McAdam, who would I have as a centre-back. And then they have Gavin Dugan, I think, plays around there as well. But he's a wing forward
forward
as well. So
they play Carl O'Connell there sometimes as well. They're their three options, realistically. There's one, two and three for midfield, all gone. Now, Kieran might be back, and like, if he's back for the championship, but he's missed an entire league, what kind of shape will he be in, you know? Like, I mean, but he has to start maybe alongside, who did you say there? Not Dugan.
McAdam.
That would probably be the midfield then.
Yeah, it's very disappointing. I remember when Tyrone beat Monaghan in the semi-final, I was actually disappointed because I thought Monaghan could pose Dublin a bigger threat because of all those players that they have. They just have so many different options than most other teams. So the fact that they're missing three of their big guns, I don't know, I feel very flat now. Like, the Ulster Championship is almost like hurling. Like, you know, it's a gift from the gods and we don't criticise it, but it seems like it might not be as good this year.
Yeah, no, maybe not. I'm just seeing that am I missing anything here? I don't think so. Darren Hughes, so all those Monaghan lads out. So disappointing news, this is the last story of the day. So Eamon Fitzmaurice has been on, and a very honourable thing he did here, really, because there were some accusations of Nace students who were in the crowd at that All-Ireland semi-final. It was Nace versus Pubblescull Corca Duivna. There's my Irish for you there now, so all the Gaelgoers can laugh at me for that. He said there was some racist chanting from the students in the stand at one of the Kerry players, and they didn't bring this to light until after the final, which was, I think, a lovely thing to do, because they didn't want to look like sour grapes, and they didn't want to take away from Nace School, who might be answerable to this but had no part in it. The players, the school themselves, it was a small section of students who were engaging in some racist chanting towards a player. So they brought it up and they're hoping to maybe stamp this out. And he said the Nace players must be complimented for the way in which they played and behaved themselves. As a result, we decided against contact in Croke Park until the final had been played. It was an element of their supporters who were responsible for the racist chants. Now, we've all heard boisterous chanting at big schools games, but this crossed the line and has no place in GAA or society. And I think we'd all agree on that. So, primary chairperson of the GAA, Seamus Woods, has said that the association have a very clear policy on this. Rule 1.12 of official guide deals with racist behaviour. Anything in conflict with our policy of inclusion and diversity can be deemed as a discredit to the association. There's a very high threshold of response. So obviously NACBS are going to have to find these students. It's something that I find very surprising. in that those students are growing up in multicultural classrooms. And while I remember racist jokes when I was in school and it was a bit giggly and whatever, like, I mean, I'm surprised that in this generation that that kind of stuff would go on, and really disappointed that it would go on. And I thought the young people of today at that age in secondary school, and I often thinking of Mannix coming up through primary school, thinking everybody's just the same for him. Yeah. It's just his, that'll just be his life. And I was thinking that 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds and high secondary school students would be thinking the very same thing. So I was shocked when I heard that they would be doing that. Like, young Irish fellas at that age chanting racist chants at a GA match. Now, they need to be found and they need to be, dealt with by NAACBS. And it's unfortunate for NAACBS, who can't control what some students do in the crowd either.
Yeah, we like to think of ourselves as very welcoming in the GA, and it's a game for everybody. And like, it's sort of different to rugby. It's not as elitist and, you know, a class issue. But something like that's just disgraceful. Like, you know, are you an organisation or a team, or, you know, at that club feel, are you that for everybody, or are you not? Are you sort of separated that we just want this certain type of people who've always played, especially in Nice, which is more diverse than it ever has been? It's like a commuter town into Dublin now, so there's more and more diversity in Nice. We're like, geez, like, lads, welcome to the real world now. Like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. No, it's disappointing. I think the book will be thrown at the students, and hopefully it will. So we'll leave it there, lads, and we'll be back and we'll talk about Ballymun with Paddy Christie.
A lot of people do say, what do you love about hunting? They say, is it the fresh air? Is it the great outdoors? Is it the thrill? No. I just love killing things, right? Absolutely.
So the Dublin Championship kicked off last night, and there's more games at the weekend. The standout one being holders Kilmacud Crokes taking on favourites for the Championship, Ballymun Kickhams, on Saturday. And to talk to us about Ballymun Kickhams, who are the great enigma, I think, of Dublin club football, Paddy Christie is on the line. How's it going, Paddy?
Harry Cadman.
Is it fair to describe Ballymun as the great enigma of Dublin club football? Well, since 2012, maybe.
Unfortunately, it probably is. It's probably not a nice term, but it has negative sort of connections with it. But you're talking about a team, I suppose, that has an awful lot of quality, and you would have expected, I suppose, after 2012, that we would have won with the group that we had, that we would have won between now and then, that we would have won in the space of 7 years probably another two championships. And the fact that there's been nothing since, a couple of finals, semi-finals, stuff like that, but overall it hasn't been a great return on what possibly should have been there.
Why do you think that is?
I don't think anything in life is ever down to one thing, but I suppose the elephant in the room, I think, as regards club football in Dublin and as regards club football, I suppose, throughout the country, particularly in Dublin, with Dublin's success, I think the amount of county players that the club have, that the senior team has, I think it's probably a hilarious thing to say, but I think it affects us negatively.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's other counties, other clubs in other counties who would be so delighted of half the number of fellas we have involved if they had them in their club. But we just find, I suppose, over the years, I had an involvement 1 year there a couple of years ago. I was training the lads, and Paddy Carr was the manager, and I thought it was a very difficult year trying to keep everything going, and we were tight on numbers throughout the year. Then the lads come back having won in All-Ireland, difficult to sort of reintegrate them, and you have a sort of pattern of play that you had all year, and then it's changed. So I think that has a big effect on things. I'm not saying it's the only reason, but I certainly think that it is a disadvantage for us to have the number of players we have involved.
Yeah, and this is the thing, like, I mean, they're such big players, and what I was thinking about it is the likes of Philly McMahon, the likes of James McCarthy, the likes of John Small, they're such versatile players that you need to maybe try them out in a couple of different positions and get your kind of teams settled, and you don't have an opportunity to do that.
Well, you can't. I mean, they're playing, you know, an All-Ireland final, and then 2 weeks later, they're out playing for you in a big match, and that could be a knockout game or whatever. And I mean, you've no chance. I mean, the week of any game, you'd know yourself over the years, very few top clubs or top counties would be doing anything heavy the week of a game. It'd be just a kick around and there'd be a bit of talk and that sort of thing. So if you have 2 weeks with the lads, you really only have 1 week, and that's maybe two sessions. And I mean, yeah, if they're after winning All-Ireland, with due respect, they're entitled to a few days off and have a bit of crack. So, I mean, it's just, I think it's very, very difficult. I think that the likes of St. Vincent's and other clubs around the country in the relevant club championships, that if they don't have an awful lot of players in the county team, I think that stands to them. And I think if you look at Vincent's over the years, they're not, I know they may have got a little bit less powerful in the last 18 months, but still overall they've been the standout team in Dublin, probably the standout team other than Cora Finn in the last 5 or 6 years, and they're like, they haven't had many fellas involved in the panel.
Yeah,
that's the truth.
And yeah, they haven't, no. And like, I mean, this new structure is really killing Ballymun now altogether, because two of the early games are done away with that might be easier games, and then you could be closer to the knockout when you come back, when the lads are coming back off an All-Ireland win.
I mean, if you think of Saturday, like, Ballymun have to get themselves sorted so quickly for a relatively difficult game. I mean, Kilmacud are obviously the champions. I wouldn't say Ballymun anyway would fear them, and they're well capable of winning that game, but there's a possibility that it won't come off, and then they're down a game. You know, the game is, they have 2 points left behind them, and they're under pressure then in the next game. It's very, very difficult. From my point of view, I think it's nearly impossible to manage that situation. And I think what you have to remember as well is, Colm, that like during the year, the effect that it has on the rest of the panel is huge, because you have fellas who are playing nearly every league game throughout the year, and that's 14 or 15 games in Dublin, and then at some stage they're on the bench for a big game and may not get a run at all.
Yeah.
Then when the thing is over and you're knocked out, or if you win, but normally most teams eventually lose, and if you're knocked out, then the lads are gone, and they're back with Dublin in January, and you're going back to the fellas that you like sort of dropped off the team.
Yeah.
And you're looking for them to give 100%. And I suppose, like, with due respect, you wouldn't do it yourself. After a while, you get browned off with that as well.
Yeah, it's a very difficult. It's a very difficult situation, really, isn't it?
Well, I think it's nearly impossible. I can't see how it's really. I don't know how you do it. And I think even if you win, it doesn't solve the problem, because say you win and you know people are happy with that, ever. But the lads who have been dropped, who've been playing all year, they're still not in great shape. You know, they're still the problem. The conundrum is still there the following January.
Yeah.
Because or whenever it is that you finish off in an All Ireland club run or whatever, you've still got the same problem. Like, so, you know, it is very, very difficult. It's a great complaint in one way, but really, I think it's hard. And I think it's even more complicated by the fact that you have fellas who are so pivotal to the Dublin team. Like, we have lads there who are key members of the Dublin team for the last number of years, and they are playing a lot of football.
Yeah.
They're playing a lot of big games. They're going to the Well over and over again. And then, you know, in their downtime as such, you're looking for them to get back up to full speed, and it's hard. And I mean, I did it myself for a number of years. We were winning Leinster's, or we weren't winning All-Ireland, sadly, but you were winning Leinster's, you were coming back at some stage after an All-Ireland quarter-final, semi-final, and people were getting sort of annoyed with you because you weren't going 100%, but you know, you'd been going hard for 9 months.
Yeah.
And then, you know, at some stage you just sort of take your foot off the pedal, and people feel then you're not contributing to the club, whatever. But you just can't keep going with that.
Yeah, well, like I remember with Portlaoise, the best years I played with Portlaoise was when I came back from not having a great year with the county and wanted to prove something. But like, I mean, these lads are coming back from an All Ireland, like they're almost like their year is almost done, and then mentally they have to get back to the pitch of club players. I don't know how to do it. Now, that doesn't excuse losing finals, because they should be back up to that pitch by the time, you know, they lost the two finals for Vincent's, for example.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, I think that the final, the year that I was involved, the final against Vincent's, we it's fair to say we nearly totally underperformed. I mean, there was very few lads who really did themselves justice on the day. We were very flat, and it was even harder in light of the first couple of minutes where we started on fire and James McCarthy put in that infamous hit.
Yeah,
and
I was at
really
the game. Yeah,
I mean, the team should have been driven on from there after that, and it just didn't happen. A couple of very base mistakes that were punished, and Vincent went on to win. Sort of, even though they didn't really, it wasn't they didn't hammer or something like that, but they were just much the better team, and we never really challenged them. It was very disappointing. So that, you're right, that doesn't explain. I mean, that particular performance, yeah, I think you'd have to sort of wonder where we went wrong there. But I mean, I still think overall in the last 6 years, your original question about why are we an enigma, or why is there this problem, I think a central part of it is the amount of county players. And ironically, every club wants to get as many players playing at a high level as possible. But I think in this situation, with the success of Dublin at the moment, I think it's counterproductive, you know.
Yeah, and I think actually it needs to be pointed out, back in 2012 when you won the county title, you just had Philly McMahon and James McCarthy in with Dublin. Now you have James McCarthy, right, Philly McMahon, Dean Rock, John Small, Evan Comerford, and then Paddy Small, Jason Whelan, Davy Byrne was in there for a couple of years, you know what I mean? So, and like, it's a complete change from 2012 when you did win it.
Well, in 2012 as well, we you have to remember as well that the likes of Dean Rock wasn't really
a
key figure in the Dublin squad. In fact,
I don't think he was on it. No, he wasn't on it.
So,
yeah,
you know, he went out with a point to prove, and John Small was only beginning to come. In fact, sort of John Small was sort of, I think at one stage he was on a break for a while and that sort of thing. He was very much, you know, on the fringe of things. He wasn't a pivotal player and like that. So, I mean, it's totally different. I think that squad in 2012 had a lot of hunger, and the lads who were a lot of the Kentucky lads had a lot of drive in them. But like, they've clocked up a lot of mileage. They've been on the go a long time, and it's really, I think, part of Ballymun's sort of, I think that the main thing that they need to focus on now is trying to get younger players in, fresh players, so you're not constantly drawing on the same fellas and looking for John Small to give another bit, and looking for James McCarthy to do another bit, and Philly to do another bit, because these fellas, they mightn't have too much more to give. Like, if they're at the end of the season, they're not going to have too much to give, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly. Is there any kind of mental issues kind of coming from the All-Ireland final loss? So we all know they played St. Bridget's in the All-Ireland final in 2013 in March, and were running away with it and ended up losing it. That later on that year, they got back to the county final and had it won against Vincent's, and Vincent's ended up drawing it. I think they might have got 1-2 in injury time or something.
Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah.
And then you lost the replay. Like, I mean, they were two huge, huge hammer blows for any club. Like, I mean, for me, it looks like they've never recovered from that.
Yeah, that's a valid point. I mean, those two particular games, I would say, it's hard, I suppose it might be difficult to believe, but I would say that the Vincent's one in 2013, the game that went to the replay, that was a bigger hurt for us than the other one. The one in the All Ireland Club Final. Yeah, it was very tough to take and all, but you have to say the Bridges were very good. They didn't perform in the first half like that. While we were on top, I'd know a few lads in the Bridges team over the years, and they'd say that they didn't play well in the first half. They only came into the second half. So I mean, everyone has their own slant and things, but I think the Vincent's game, I mean, I was at that game. Ballymun were 4 or 5 up going into injury time. The only way Vincent could get back into it was a goal, and the lads, I think, let Vincent's through very easy. The ball hit the back of the net. Still, we were still ahead, but they ended up just catching up with us and getting a draw, and went to replay, and then the rest is history. But I mean, that was the game that, I mean, a bit of cuteness there maybe, and just a cynical foul or something like that would have just put a stop to it. But just those small little things affected it. And I suppose when you look at it, if you'd have won against Bridges in 2012 or 2013, and if you'd have beaten Vincent's that year, you might have gone on and won a second All-Ireland Club title. And that's the tough thing to look at, the fact that there's zero as opposed to what could have been two very easily, you know.
Yeah, yeah, it's the fine lines. Come here, this is just from playing with Parnells and being in and around the Dublin club scene, what might be said. And like, it's kind of like, if you can rattle Ballymun and get ahead of them, they might start arguing amongst each other and they could self-implode. Now, tell me if I'm completely wrong with that, or is that gone out of the team now?
I don't feel that. I wouldn't feel that. I feel most of the time that when we've lost over the years, when we lost against Vince, certainly when I was involved a couple of years ago, we lost to Vince because they were the better team the night. We underperformed, and it wasn't the case of them getting ahead. We started quite quickly and didn't put them away. Then they got a goal from a mistake and they pushed on. But I mean, I don't see that as being, I mean, I think generally that for some of the years there that we didn't push on because we just weren't good enough on given days. And I do think as well that the likes of Vincent in particular did get a couple of players that that made a huge difference to them. Do you know, sort of way, I think that I think Vincent may not have got over the line if they didn't have the quality that of the lads that they brought in. A couple of guys came in from the country who were very good. And I'm particularly talking about the likes of Varley from
Brendan Egan too. Yeah.
Brendan Egan, excellent player. Varley, excellent player. Like, when you look at Varley there, a couple of the scores that he kicked in the last number of years, right and left foot. I mean, I would honestly say that if he was playing with Ballymun, I would feel that we would have won the championship. So I think, you know, it's grand to say, oh, Ballymun must be doing this, or must be mentally ready, whatever. But, like, I think that the likes of Vincent had very good teams, and particularly supplemented by the likes of Varley and Egan and these guys. And Ballymun just wouldn't have, we would have a lot of lads who would be just coming through the ranks or whatever, and we wouldn't have the same sort of quality coming in.
Yeah, well, you would have had James Burke, and Givney from Cavan was there 1 year too.
Givney was there, he was injured a lot of the time.
Right.
James Burke has been there since minor, so I suppose that's slightly different. But right, I think that if Varley came in for us 4 or 5 years ago, or the likes of Brendan Egan, I do think that could have just pushed us over the finish line a couple of times as well. I do think that sometimes it's very simplistic, but if you have really good quality players, I do think it, and I think it's the same with Jim Gavin set up, if you have a lot of good quality players, I do think that they'll get you a long way as well. I know you can have tactics, you can have team spirit, you can have facilities and all different things, but I think you know, the quality of players that Vince would have themselves, and then adding on to it with the likes of those lads, I think has sort of got them over the finishing line a couple of times, you know.
Yeah. So, Kamir, you've been credited with being responsible for bringing up an awful lot of these players through the underage ranks. So you took over the under-10s when you were very young, and those under-10s had Ted Furman, Davy Byrne, Philly McMahon, Eddie Christie, who's your brother, and you brought them right up through the ranks. And then James McCarthy, Dean Rock, Owen Dolan, all that age group, they joined at under 21 level, and you won 3 in a row. So, like, I mean, that must be a nice feeling to have seen them win a county title. I think there was 13 from your under 21s on that team in 2012 that won the county title.
That's right, yeah. No, that's lovely to see. And like, as you pointed out, some of them wouldn't have always been with us since under 10. The likes of James Burke joined late. And you had a couple of other fellas who sort of only started playing when they were 13 or 14. But I mean, there is a core of fellas there who were there since they were 9. So you're talking about my own brother, Ted, Philly. I think Alan Hubbard would have joined the following year. Owen Dolan and these fellas. So, like, you have fellas together for to go to 10 years, and they become very close, and they formed obviously the core of the senior team then for the last number of years. But the big thing is now, Willie, is that we have to find new people like that, you know, because these guys are now 30, 31, 32, and they have to, you know, they have to be given a little bit of space and sort of be put in a position sometimes where, look, you might get 30 minutes out of them, or 15 minutes when they're under pressure, or play the first 40 and then come off. But I mean, depending on these fellas over and over again to go to the well, I think is tough, and that's where Ballymun have to try and bring in some of the new lads. There's been a lot of good underage players. They would have won the 21 championship last year. So trying to get the balance right then for these guys, where you can bring in a couple of new fellas that doesn't disrupt the whole way the team functions, you know.
Yeah. How did you get them all committing at under 10? How did they all land down? Like, I mean, how did you recruit them? Because some of them are from the flats and that's well documented. And, you know, did you have to go headhunting these lads or going to the schools to get them to come up? Or how did you... How did you...
Headhunting is a bit strong. Oh, okay. I mean,
for a 9-year-old.
I suppose what I would have done was, Colm, I would have been very... At the start, I would have sort of been training the lads who just showed up and never really thought about how they were getting there. I mean, like, it was so primitive at the time. I mean, some of the teachers in some of the local schools would tell fellas that there was training. Ballymun Kickham's training at 3 o'clock in Poppentry Park on a Friday, and I would just go up and train them. And it started to dawn on me after a while that, you know, there probably is more fellas out there. I mean, I wasn't even a teacher at the time. So I'd done a bit of coaching in the summer camps, and I sort of, but I was like a novice, complete novice. And, you know, I've learned a little bit since, but at the time I didn't have a clue. And after a while, I realised there's more fellas out there. So I started getting them to bring friends and that sort of thing. So I'd say to a fella, look, if you bring a friend up, we'll give you a prize or a pair of gloves or this or a bit of crack. You know, I'd have a few freebies from around. I was playing, obviously, with Dublin that day. So I'd say, look, if you bring a friend and he stays playing, you can do. We'll give you a packet of crisps or a bit of a laugh. Like, to make we make training fun, give out prizes for fellas, whoever it's for. You know, a penalty shoe, winning a penalty shoe out and this sort of thing. I'm just trying to make it as fun as possible. As it turned out afterwards, that is probably the way to do things, you know, the sort of way, and get the fellas early, get them up playing, because once they come playing for the club, they may go again very easy, but the likelihood is they will still come back if the setup is good, because, you know, there'll always fellas be drifting away and the fellas playing soccer and other things like that. But you'll normally find that if you get them rich playing early on, at least they'll feel that they're Ballymun Kickham's is their club. And that was a big thing for me, that fellas had a pair of shorts.
Yeah.
With the Kickham's crest in it.
Come here quickly. Did any of the players come from your bring a friend policy? Any of the well known players come from this?
Yeah, well, there would have been I mean, at the start, Philly and Davey would have been very pally. And Philly came up and he brought Davey up with him once, I think, and then I met him in school and I was training the school team, I think, and Davey was there and I said, will you come back up? And so I think it was something like that. Definitely there was a few really good lads came up through that way.
Yeah.
And as well as that, if you have a young fella trying to join or thinking about joining who's shy, it's very hard for him to come into a group of 20 kids that he mightn't necessarily know with a new manager. Whereas if you get somebody to come with their friend, it's like, you know, you have somebody with you, there's safety in numbers. It's like going to a party when you get a bit older. Like, it's always nice to have somebody with you as opposed to just going in and not knowing anyone, you know, sort of way. So, like, that was a big thing as well, to make life easy for fellas to join. That was important. So we always tried to make sure that we were sort of friendly with them when they came and welcomed them, that sort of thing, and told them about the next session and made them feel that we wanted them to come back, you know.
Philly's on record for saying he had a lot of aggression when he was a young fella, and, like, I mean, Davy Byrne has a lot of aggression. Some people would say he still has a lot of aggression. He was when I was playing against him anyways, but, like, I mean, me and him would have had lots of verbal jousts on the field. But, like, I mean, I suppose you probably used that aggression they had to your advantage, you know, like, I mean, channel it in the right way and everyone benefited from it.
Yeah, well, I mean, ultimately, when you're not a huge club, and you have to remember, Woody, that we're now what you'd call a medium-sized club. We're not even a super club or anything like that, but we're a medium-sized club. At the time, we were really small. We had a great name, but the club had sort of fallen apart, and the structures underneath were rotten, you know. We didn't have a huge pick. Like, you know, if somebody had a problem like Davey or Philly, and they were causing all the hassle, we weren't exactly in a position where you could just say, right, get lost and don't come back.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have people to replace them. So you had to look at it and say, right, how can I take this, you know, problem or weakness and turn it into a strength? So needless to say, you know, aggression in some forms is very important in football. And, you know, to have fellas who are not afraid in one regard is actually brilliant to have, particularly if you have a team of fellas who, a group of fellas who might be, some of them might be quiet and shy. You need to have a mix there. You need to have fellas who will not be afraid to get stuck in. And certainly you never felt over the years when we were playing anyone, if the physical battles became big, you were never, you know, fearful that we would in any way be intimidated, you know, sort of way, which is good. I mean, and from my point of view, I was sort of given a bit of stick for saying when teams were very aggressive and all. It was ironic because, as you know from playing me, I was an angel when I was playing Woolly, a bit like yourself. So we never struck a dirty blow like that. But the teams I had, particularly that team, were quite aggressive. But I mean,
they'd be fighting, like they'd be in trouble sometimes, but they could get in trouble with fighting, and if you couldn't come down too hard on them, or you might lose them. So there's the whole dynamic of keeping them on side, but having to discipline them as well.
Yeah, well, there has to be a balance. I mean, they can't run riot, and yet you can't be telling them to go around and not lay a hand on anyone. Like, they have to be. I mean, it's a physical game. You're allowed to hit somebody with your shoulder. You're allowed to aggressively go for the ball. I mean, that's part of the game. And while the game has got considerably quieter since me and you played, well, certainly since I played anyway, it's still a physical game, and there's still that level of aggression in it. So, I mean, you can channel that in the right way, and sometimes it goes a little bit too far. But I mean, if you look at the Tyrones and the Armaghs that I played against years ago, so you played against them as well, I mean, yeah, that's part of the game, and that's the way it was, and you had to sort of get on with it.
Yeah, I have to say to you, we played against Ballymun. I was under 12, so this was about 1990. That's how old I am, and it was some sort of a fail. It was up in Luke, or up in the Temple Oag or something, and we played Ballymun, and it was one Saturday morning, and it was under 12, and half the team had moustaches. So they hammered us. They hammered us. I was literally terrified to touch the ball.
There might have been many Raiders around or something like that. You know what I mean? The Raider might have been hard come by. I don't know. But the ironic thing about that is that that was one of our biggest problems when we were playing matches with the original team I had, and the second team I took as well. But both teams, and particularly the first team, has huge problems physically. I mean, we were always playing against physically bigger teams, and part of that might have been to do with the fact that six or seven of the squad, I'd say 17 or 18 players, were underage. They were a year too young. In fact, Ted was 2 years too young. So when Ted was playing under 10 with me, he was only 7. So you had that problem. Eventually, Ted got a lot bigger and stronger. When he was 15, he was like the size of a minor. But at the start, it was for the first number of years, we found it hard to win big games because we weren't physically big enough, you know. And I don't know what team that was, but it's few and far between now when you hear somebody talking about Ballymun teams being big, because you must be in particularly smaller.
Smaller afraid as at 12 years of age. Come here, Paddy, I've taken up enough of your time. Thanks very much, and fingers crossed Ballymun can get over. Like, it's always my opinion, if they can win one more, they could win three in a row type of thing, but they want to be doing it soon, like you said, because Philly and James and all these, and Dean Rock and all these lads, and Davy Byrne, the whole kind of crew of them aren't getting any younger.
Correct, yeah. They are... There's a certain amount of time that you have. There's a window there. And thankfully, there's some good young players coming through, which will keep things going. But there is a possibility that if you don't do something soon, that they'll sort of drop down into sort of the middle tier in Division 1, where you're a quarterfinalist every year, semi-finalist, but you're not going to really make it. And they're still in that level at the moment, the top tier, where they're one of the contenders. But like, that's not going to last forever. And if you do bring in the young fellas, you're talking about couple of years of grounding then, where they're getting used to things and they're going to go into that middle tier, and then they might come back up into the top tier, but it's going to be a transition. So this is the time now, and after that then, you know, if the likes of Philly and these boys can win one or two, it would be fantastic for them to finish off their careers, because I suppose the likes of Philly, with due respect, he probably is not going to be playing much longer into county wise. He's a lot of mileage, so it'd be lovely for him to finish off with a couple of county titles, you know.
Yeah, no, it definitely would. Paddy, thanks very much for taking the call.
No problem. Mind yourself.
That's all we've time for this week. We'll be back on Monday with another show, and we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.